A couple of brief midrashim this morning. Interesting midrash about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to forgive them, the Meraglim, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was irritated about and they were punished for. So there's a dual phrase, and the midrash splits it, there's splices between the two. So, Vanhi Benenu Kechagavim, they saw us as grasshoppers. That's how tall they were, that's how towering they were. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Vitarti Alehem. The fact that you complained, that you were worried and panicky because you were smaller than them, that I can be mevater, that I can look past, that I can wave. I'm not going to punish you for that statement. But V'chein Hayinu Be'enehem, not only did we see ourselves as midgets or as grasshoppers, but that's the way they saw us, V'chein Hayinu Be'enehem, that I'm not willing to forgive you for. Yodim Hayisem Ma'asisi Etchem Le'enehem. Do you know how they saw you? Mi Omar Shelo Yisem Be'enehem Malachim. Maybe they saw you as angels. Magram Dem La'atzmachem. So it's a fascinating, really there are two fascinating elements of this medrash. One is that, let's start inside out. One is what people do when they panic. Very often when you panic, and it's hard, it's important in life to learn panic, because panic is a very, very devastating moment in life, and when you panic, you act irrationally. When you panic, you act foolishly. You make terrible decisions. There's an old parable. The two people are walking to it. One person's walking from a town, and he meets two people that look very malicious walking towards the town. And he asks him, where are you going? The person leaving the town asks the people coming to the town. And they said, we're going to destroy the town of 100,000 people. We're going to annihilate them all. So the person who left the town says, well, how do you plan to do it? So he says, my name is Plague. I'm going to kill 10,000. I want to introduce you to my friend. His name is Panic. He's going to kill the additional 90,000. So at a collective level, but also at a personal level, people panic. So you have to learn the anatomy of panic. You have to learn the results of panic, what happens when you panic. Therefore, when you panic, you start thinking outside of yourself. You start obsessing about fear. You start thinking outside of yourself rather than within yourself. And within yourself means, okay, let me assess the situation. What is frightening me? What resources do I have? Am I able to overcome those, that adversity or not? When you start panicking, you think outside of yourself about the monster in the room and the boogeyman that's out to get you and you think outside rather than within yourself. And this is a classic example. It's one thing to say, okay, let me see how tall I am, how tall these giants are. Okay, my assessment is that me to them is like a grasshopper to me. It's like a SAT question, like a ratio question. What is my size compared to the giant? How can I compare that? How can I have a parable? It would be like a grasshopper to me. So to say that you feel like you're a grasshopper, I mean, again, this sounds hyperbolic. This sounds like very, very dramatic, like a flair for the drama. Okay, but at least you're on solid ground because you're thinking within yourself. But when you start saying this, how they saw you, I know what they saw. Maybe they heard about reports about the Jewish people. Remember, Rachav told the two Meraglim in the Haftarah, Parsha Shlach, beginning of Yeshua, how frightened they were to Magul Kodeshechinan. When I saw these grasshoppers coming, oh my goodness, women get very frightened with mice. So maybe the giants were very frightened. I'm like, look at these grasshoppers, these religious fanatic grasshoppers. You know, they're wearing their tzitzis, and they're so frightening grasshoppers. Like, people get very frightened. Not because small things, elephants are afraid of mice. So the panic led them to start thinking beyond their own selves and beyond their own capacity. And you have to learn in life not to obsess and not to always remain within yourself. It's called calm and poise. So remain within yourself. Poise doesn't mean you're not precautionary. Poise just means that you think within yourself rather than outside of yourself. So that's one interesting element of the Medrash. What's fascinating is that somehow the Medrash casts the ability to deal with panic properly as a religious ability and the inability to deal with panic as a religious flaw. Because Hashem's not just saying, oh, you failed your psych test and you know you have to go back and start your course again. You failed psych 101. Because psych 101 teaches us how to deal with panic and you didn't deal with it the right way. So you flub your test, go back and take more bed, take a redo. It sounds like that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is disappointed with them religiously because faith should help you through moments of panic and moments of uncertainty and help stabilize your emotional reaction. And because they were unstable and because they were imbalanced in their response, that is seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a lack of emuna, and therefore is they have to be held accountable. So there really are two interesting elements about this medrash. One is the anatomy of panic, the psychology of panic. Two is the relationship between panic and between faith and belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Just because we have a few more minutes. Another interesting medrash. Vayelchu vayavo al Moshe v'al Aaron vayisapru lo vayem ubanu al eretz efes kiyazam. When they give their report, their slanderous report, their libelous report, so it starts off very positive. We saw this, it's a beautiful land, and then it ends up being very malicious and very virulent. So the Medrash comments, and it's a comment which I think is a double layer. Kach darkan shel mesapre lashon hara. This is the way of people that slander others, in this case slander the land of God. Poschim betova, they begin on a positive note, u'mashlim imbara, and then they conclude with toxic statements. Now, this matters can mean one of two things, and probably both. One is that people who slander are manipulative. So people who manipulate language, manipulate sequencing. So if I want to slander Yehuda, let's say, so if I come with guns blazing and I just start attacking you and assaulting you, then I'm seen as imbalanced, I'm seen as full of hate and full of vile. So, obviously, we live in a world in which words are weaponized and people want to dehumanize, have ample following on the internet or on social media. But essentially, most normal sane people will see me as a hateful, baleful person, and they'll disregard what I'm saying. Oh, that Rabbi Tarian is just saying negative things just because he's imbalanced. But if I am very much more nuanced and I say, look, he's a great person, he really has a lot going for him, a lot of positive traits. Now, not knocking him, but, and then I put in the word, this isn't a knock against him, but that could be more effective because most people will be blindsided by what they think is a compliment, and all of a sudden I'll slip in a hurtful statement, slanderous statement. So it's more manipulative and exploitative how you manage language. So obviously the more subtle points always, if you want to persuade people in life about anything, not just slander, so you can mouth off and you can scream and shout, you can be very, very black and white and very polar. Most sane-headed, level-headed people are able to see through it. Again, we don't live in a sane, level-headed world, but social media has shifted that. We're more into identity politics, where you vote, are you right, are you left, who do you support? But assuming that belief in life and ideology isn't sports, there isn't just a fan base. What are you a fan of? Well, I'm a Democrat, therefore I'm a fan of these 10 ideas. I'm a Republican, I'm a fan of these 10 ideas. I'm right, I'm left. Assuming you're thinking about life, actually, you're much more persuasive if you're subtle. Okay? That's one level to the Medrash. A different level to the Medrash is it's not just intentional, that the intentional slanderers start with something soft and positive, and there's a long runway, and then they start slowly but surely chipping away at the person's integrity, at the person's virtue, but it's subconscious. Now you start talking about people, and you start talking about, when you start assessing, then you naturally will end up finding something to criticize and something to. A member of Liechtenstein, he was very uncomfortable when we started talking about people, even if we weren't talking about them in a slanderous way. Obviously, if I was saying something great about someone and it was all positive, then there's nothing to fear. You're excited, you're enthusiastic about a person, you want to praise them and compliment them. But once you start assessing someone, even if your intentions are l'shem shemayim, your intentions are legit, you can slowly, without realizing it, unintentionally, start veering towards. So the question is in life, what do you talk about? Eleanor Roosevelt, evidently the wife of FDR, the President of the United States in the mid-40s, once evidently said, I'm not sure she said it, but evidently she said it, the following: small minds talk about people, average minds talk about events, large minds talk about ideas. So it's actually a pyramid of what you want to talk about. I fear that we're becoming a very shallow world. People aren't reading as much. What they do read, they read very, very quickly. They don't have time to process. Just tell people, you know, I study speakers to become a better speaker. And I like listening to people who speak and they have pregnant pauses. They slow down and they don't have to say everything, and they can end without explaining because they give time people to process and to internalize. So when you repeat your words, like I'm doing right now, so you're not saying anything new. You're just letting ideas sink in. You're letting ideas internalize themselves rather than another idea and another idea and another idea. Like when I teach high school kids, sometimes I don't have that luxury. High school kids is the hardest thing to teach because their brains aren't wired for processing things deeply. So we have to constantly, like, every 10 seconds has to be a new idea. Every 10 seconds has to be new information. I feel like I'm under the gun. I've got a 10-second window. I have to do something new and something additional and move on. And when I speak to people like yourselves and obviously people that are more mature, I feel like I take an idea and slowly unfold it and slowly unpack it. So I think Eleanor Roosevelt was speaking about the moral ladder. It's just more moral and more enriching to speak about ideas. Unfortunately, I remember this horrifying night I once had. It's like 15 years ago. I was in the States for the summer. Everyone's saying the entire summer we were in Hask for the summer. Everyone's saying the entire summer you have to go to Walmart. You have to go to Walmart. Okay, so we went to Walmart. We blew a couple hundred dollars. We didn't have to spend this. We had to go to Walmart. So we bought tchotchkele that we didn't need. And Walmart in the summer in the Catskills, maybe 600,000, 700,000 Jews migrate to the hill. It's an incredible pilgrimage of humanity. And there's a pop-up Orthodox community of every possible service you can imagine. It's like basically recreating an entire city in a matter of a couple of days, like raising the entire city, like the Mishkan. Anyway, so we went to Walmart, and of course happened to pick the line when the register was broken. So I was sitting there for an hour in line listening. And in front of me and behind me, there were two Orthodox families from the Jewish, different segments of the Jewish community in the United States. And I was eavesdropping on their conversation for about an hour because I had nothing better to do. I didn't have a phone. We didn't have cell phones. I was listening to their conversations on either side. And it dawned on me that for an hour, neither of them had raised an idea. They were all discussing people. This one, that one, that one, this one, this one, that one. I thought about Eleanor Roosevelt. I thought about a life in which you only speak about people or events rather than high-minded ideas. And just make sure that as you grow in life, you introduce ideas into your mind, into your heart, into the people around you, obviously your family, your community. But I think aside from Eleanor Roosevelt's issue of whether you want to speak about high-minded issues or low-minded issues, when you start speaking about people, you can veer from average neutral conversation to, oh, by the way, there's this, you ever see that issue? It's not a knock, but, you know, I'm not saying anything negative, but it's like I really dislike the person, but. So this is a medrash that I think has two layers. Again, the language is kach darkan shel mesaprei lashon hara poschin betova umashlimin bera. Does that mean that there's a malicious strategy? Let me first pad the person's ego, pad the person's reputation, and then slip in something slicing and something hurtful? Or it's not even malicious, it's just human nature. As you start talking about people, it's harder to avoid criticizing them, and you unintentionally arrive at slander. So, two interesting midrashim. One midrash about the path of panic and the relationship between panic and faith, and how faith should buttress us and should solidify us and help us avoid panic, which is really important in our world. Panic, terror is all panic. Terror is not statistics. You're how many times, whatever, X amount of time safer when you get on a plane than when you go to the airport to get on the plane. You're in a lot more danger when you're driving to the airport, but it's not even close. How many plane accidents there a year? How many road accidents there a year? Of course, the numbers don't stack up. I'm living in Israel. The irony is, living in Israel, the safest year to live in Israel was the year of the most terror in 2001, because fewer people drove on the roads, and the amount of road casualties is, unfortunately, a couple hundred a year die. Even during the worst, terrible waves of terror, 80 people, you're not talking about the numbers of road casualties. So terror is purely psychological. Wherever, I'm sure, all three of your communities, you're in a lot more danger crossing the street than you would be walking in Hebron, just to put the statistics into perspective. So you have to respond to terror with psychological strength and valor. And part of the way you respond to psychological strength and valor is through faith, and you don't lose your mind, and you stay within yourself, and you don't start worrying how people are looking at you. Second, you start worrying how people are looking at you, you're in a bad place, emotionally. So don't think that people are seeing you as a grasshopper. It's not self-esteem 101. They're not looking at you the way they think you're looking at you. They're not looking at you at all. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Have a good week.